Come fly with me. Let's fly away.
Welcome to Travel with Stephanie Abrams.
I have a very unusual show for you today. And it's unusual in that I generally don't keep a guest for two of the 3 hours. And in this show, I keep a guest not only for two of the hours, but the first segment of the third hour. And this is a guest I could talk to for weeks or maybe years and still be fascinated by the information coming forth. And that guest is Mark Leslie. He is the driving force, founder, head honcho of Martello Media. Martello Media is named for the Martello Tower in Dunleary. And that's where his office, his headquarters of his company, Martello Media, is located. He is responsible for creating interactive, amazing visitor centers for small and very big visitor centers and attractions that travelers would be interested in, not only all over Ireland, but in various places around the world. And he is a goldmine of information and accurate information. And information often that is the result of the kind of insider knowledge that people have because they're members of a family that's integrated into families that have become iconic household names historically and, you know, at a real serious celebrity level. And his grasp on all of that information is extraordinary. And I wanted to have him come on today and talk with us about the impacts on travelers, including U.S. travelers, because of what's happening with Brexit in the U.K., which you would think would have nothing to do with us and has everything to do with us. So we're going to be talking about all of that right after this.
Portions of today's show brought to you by Incredible Malta, where seascapes, landscapes, great food, beach and city resorts, incredible history and architecture, and wonderful inhabitants make Malta a must-visit destination. For details, go to visitmalta.com.
I'm delighted to have on the line with me, live from Never Say Dublin, you must be in Dunleary, in Dublin County. There's great pride in living in Dunleary, so you wouldn't want to call it Dublin, but it's in County Dublin, and a hop and a jump from Dublin Town. We have Mark Leslie, my good friend, and my personal encyclopedia for all information, current and past, and based on the conversation we just had, probably future. And I have with me, as you can hear, my production assistant, Miss Erin Gawoof. Erin, do you have anything else you'd like to share? Erin is our, well, outside of Ireland, you'd call her an English Springer Spaniel. In Ireland, she's just referred to as a Springer Spaniel. And she is gloriously gorgeous and apparently has a lot to say today. So we bring Erin to the studio often because she prefers not to be left in the office or at home alone. And she's usually quite quiet, but one of our senior executives is roaming about, and he happens to have a beard. And she loves him, but she's not wild about beards. And then a story for another day. I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Mark Leslie and I, Mark, who is the driving creative force behind Martello Media, a company he founded, is the CEO, probably managing director, chief fella in charge, and chief cook and bottle washer of a company that creates unbelievable, wonderful, engaging, interactive exhibits for a variety of different kinds of attractions that travelers and tourists and local people and school groups and anyone that's interested in the subject matter of the venue would want to go and visit. And he's done them in a variety of places all over the world, and as far away as Malta in one direction and as in Japan in the other, because we actually were in Japan in April. Oh my gosh, must be 10 years ago, I'm going to say, when Ireland was exhibiting at a World Expo I think it was, where was it? Nagoya?
Nagoya.
Yeah, Nagoya. There's a train stop right there, and you get off and you walk across the street, and you were right there in the fairgrounds. And he and his company were responsible for the installation at the Ireland Pavilion. So you really are a globetrotter with your works, aren't you, sir?
Well, I've even worked in the good old US of A, in New York, at least, anyway.
Well, and we were there for that event, for the opening night at the J.P. Morgan Library in Manhattan, in New York City. And if I've got it right, it was called Churchill, The Power of Words? Am I close?
That's correct. And I'm very proud. It was the best attended temporary exhibition in the history of the J.P. Morgan Library.
Well,
it was literally around the block.
And it ran for 6 months, from something like June or July until December of, yeah. How many years ago was that?
Well, it seems like last week, but would you believe it was 2012?
Okay. Ah, and that was also, yeah, and even your phone is celebrating.
Yes.
That was the 100th anniversary of the sinking of Titanic, April 15th at something like 2:12 or 2:20 in the morning. And
yes, I'm a child of the I'm a child of the iceberg, really, rather than the Titanic. it was the sinking of that ship that brought my grandparents together. I won't bore you with the story, but
now Boris, you know, you've told the story.
The Catholic priest, he was sent to comfort a grieving New England lady whose fiance had gone down on the Titanic, and he gave her more than spiritual comfort. He actually ended up proposing, and I always tell my children, you know, but for that iceberg, your great grandfather would have been a Catholic priest, and none of us would exist. So my kids got quite distressed seeing the actual movie. They kept saying, when's the iceberg coming, Daddy? When's the iceberg coming?
Well, and that would have been Shane Leslie, was it?
That's right. You married the beautiful Marjorie Ide of St. John's, Vermont.
Yeah, St. Johnsbury, which is about, I don't know, a five-minute drive from the Canadian border. So people, if you're going to Vermont and you plan to visit St. Johnsbury, or anywhere north of there, Dixville Notch. It's right at the Canadian border, and you'll be very frustrated that you can't just cross the border and go exploring if you don't have a passport with you. So
they have quite a fine little museum there, which just happens to be in the old Ide family mansion, because Henry Clay Ide, very distinguished American lawyer, was made chief legal advisor in American Samoa, and then went on to be the governor of the American Philippines. And he was the one who reformed the laws to make the Filipinos and their American administrators equal under the law, which had never been the case under Spanish rule. So he actually built the famous Malacañang Palace, famous for Imelda Marcos and her shoe collection. But that was actually my grandmother's childhood home, along with American Samoa, where the only other non-American people living on the island where they were was right next door, very handily, the Scottish writer Robert Louis Stevenson lives next door, of Kidnapped and Treasure Island. So he used to come and read the Ide girls their bedtime stories. And later, discovering that my grandmother had a very unfortunate birthday, Christmas Day, bequeathed his birthday to her.
Maybe you want to step on that and kill it.
Registered, I think, in Congress, that Congress, some legal device where if you don't celebrate the birthday in the proper style, you know, and drink the correct champagne, you can have that birthday taken away and bequeathed to somebody else under Robert Louis Stevenson's law.
Wow. Did I just lose you?
Well, yes. Oh. I have a niece in Dublin who ultimately inherited that birthday via a fairly complicated route. But all, I think, there's an actual U.S. act, you know, piece of legislation passed in Congress to enable that. But if you're stuck for a really good birthday idea for somebody who has an unfortunate birthday, it's not a bad idea to just leave them your birthday.
That's very interesting. No, actually, both our wedding anniversary and my birthday are 4 days apart in January and just a month after Christmas. So it's a big celebration, and then it's a long, dreary desert until next December or January. So I began years ago celebrating my unbirthday, like the Mad Hatter's Tea Party, on July 27th, so I don't get, you know, fooled out of goodies. We're going to take a quick commercial break and come back. Don't leave me. We're talking with the always interesting, amazing Mark Leslie from Martello Media in Dunleary, County Dublin, Ireland. Don't leave me.
The last smile, laughing all the while, at me curious style, to touch a heart above him. He asked me, was I hired and wages I required, till I was almost tired of the rocky road to Dublin, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, hunt the hare.
Stephanie Abrams Travel Show is brought to you by Amtrak. It's time to see New York and save 15% with Amtrak. Plan your 15% saving getaway today at Amtrak.com and click on deals and look for See New York and save 15%.
Time for more travel talk. It's Travel with Stephanie Abrams.
I'm delighted to have Mark Leslie and his many cell phones that he tells us are now all turned off. How many cell phones do you have about, sir?
Unfortunately, I'm ringing you from my work office, so
they're everywhere.
One of mine, but there were two or three of my colleagues whose one in the room that I was unaware of.
Okay. Well, and that realism, that's what that is, just realism. So, Shane Leslie, who thought he was going to be a priest, went to console family friends who had lost people on Titanic, leaving Ireland, going to Vermont, and meeting and falling in love with Marjorie Ide from Vermont. And, you know, not long ago, I went looking for the Ide family in Vermont. I have to pick up that project again. And I discovered that there was, I don't know if it was a state senator or it was a U.S. senator whose last name was Ide.
Likely that may well have been Henry Clay Ide, Marjorie's father.
No, I mean more recently.
Oh, more recently, yes, highly likely, yes, the same family. There's Ide cousins, one of whom was a senator, I think. I never met him, though.
But then your father's brother, Uncle Jack, Sir John Leslie,
He was named Ide. One of his middle names is Ide in honor of that family in America.
Yeah, and while he was born in Vermont and lived there until he was, what, 3, 4 years old, something like that?
Yes.
And then the family relocated to the family's domain in Glasslough County, Monaghan.
It was a little Lord Fauntleroy story. His father had been disinherited for his Irish nationalism and his Catholicism, and all of the estate had been entailed on the Shane's younger brother, the second son of four, and it was assumed that Shane would never come back from the United States. So at a certain point, the younger brother in 1914, 2 or 3 years after that, got killed in the first month of the First World War.
Was that Norman? Norman,
correct.
Yeah,
yes.
You know, we have a...
Still haunts Castle Leslie, interestingly enough.
Regrettably,
so
I've never seen
there was a bit of a quandary, because it was out of the question that he would ever forgive his son. Such were the political differences. But his American wife, my great-grandma said, was very keen to meet this putative American, fellow American daughter-in-law, and invited her over tentatively, and they liked her. And then they said, well, let's bring the two. The two children were actually being moved from Vermont down. We're living in Brooklyn. So these two Yank kids with Brooklyn accents were sort of unleashed on the Castle Leslie estate. And Jack managed to charm his grumpy grandparent, who said, well, the dad can stay away. But he decided to adopt his grandson as his heir. So it's a plot of Little Lord Fauntleroy, basically.
Well, you know, Leonie, who Uncle Jack married, yes?
Well, Leonie, who was the old grumpy Sir John Leslie, the grumpy grandparent and all of this, his wife was an American too. She was Lily Jerome of New York, from New York.
Yes, and the beautiful three Jerome sisters, I can only ever remember Leonie and Jenny Jerome. Who's the third?
Clara, the beautiful one.
Oh, they were all gorgeous.
They were all gorgeous, but I think they were known as the beautiful, the kind, and the wise. And I think...
I don't know. Somebody once told me I had a beautiful brain, and I said, that's probably the lousiest thing you could say to me. It's like, you know, what man tells a woman she has a beautiful brain?
But they were such snobs in Ireland that the idea of the son, you know, marrying one of the daughters of one of the richest financiers in Wall Street, you know, they thought he, because there was a legend of Iroquois blood in the Jerome family, it was as if, you know, the son had run away from home and married a squaw in a teepee. So they refused to receive poor Leonie. And she secretly came on a secret visit to the house. And one of the daughters, you know, checked her out in the hall and said the most elegantly dressed and beautiful woman she'd ever seen, you know. So I think both the Jeromes and the Leslies mutually felt that their particular child was marrying beneath themselves.
That's funny, especially since Jenny Jerome married Randolph Churchill, and their firstborn was Winston Churchill, your first cousin once or twice removed there.
That's correct, yes. So despite being half American, he did all right.
You have to love that. Well, in our conversation the other day, one of the things I was very surprised by was that I can remember when the Beatles made their revolutionary debut onto the American scene. And it was always known in my growing up years as the British Invasion. And yet we had a really enlightening conversation. You think I would have figured it out sooner about the fact that the entire Beatles group was 100% Irish.
And they're from Liverpool, which is like 90% Irish, and the 10% of Liverpool who aren't Irish are Welsh, because it's near North Wales. Mm-hmm. But it's the disembarkation port for anyone getting off the boat from Ireland, you know, for the last 500 years, was always Liverpool.
Yes.
Even people going
even today,
onwards, hoping to get out of Ireland to get to America, they'd go to Liverpool and then hope to get on a boat, a liner from Liverpool to the United States. So for every one person that sort of headed for America directly from the west of Ireland, five people headed straight to Liverpool, and a very high percentage stayed there. So in Ireland, we always say one of the solutions to the great conundrum of what to do about Belfast in the north is say, let the British keep Belfast. We want Liverpool back.
You have to love that. We're going to take a quick commercial break and come right back because there are so many subjects that Mark and I, we must have been on the phone for 2 hours yesterday. And I said, you know, it's just too selfish for me to keep all this good stuff to myself. Come on the air with me so we can share it with my audiences. And we'll be back to talk about so many things that are going to be so insightful for you and your travels after these important messages. So don't go away. We'll be right back. This is Stephanie Abrams.
Big immigrant party to friends and relations who would not forget them when come to the wall of you'd only listen. They'd make your eyes listen to rows and auctions at Lanigan Farm. We said to be sure, God's invitations for all the nice boys and girls that I'd ask. And less than a minute, the friends and relations are dancing as merry as bees with a cask. We're lashings of punch and wine with the ladies, potatoes, cakes, and was begging and table. There were the Nolans and Dolans of Gaddies, courting the girls and dancing away.
Time for more travel talk. It's Travel with Stephanie Abrams.
On the line with me, live from Ireland, is Mark Leslie. He's the CEO of Martello Media, a company that does the most interesting, engaging, interactive, 21st century, bringing the past and the present together, installations at attractions. And it, when you go to Ireland, if you go to places, in, for instance, a Black Rock Observatory in Cork, or the National Library in Dublin, where you'll find the Yeats exhibit, or the General Post Office, the GPO, which is like the Alamo story of the war for Irish independence, in which there was a dreadful Easter Sunday massacre, overreaction of the British army in Dublin, and pretty much killing everybody in sight. When you go to the General Post Office, affectionately known as the GPO, you can stick your, like, you know, you stick your finger in the dike to keep the water from coming through. You can put your finger in the bullet holes in the stone facade and the columns. It looks like, I don't know, it looks like one of the buildings you'd find in Washington, D.C. or in Athens, Greece. It's this, you know, kind of Gothic or Greek style of architecture, columns and building. And when you go inside, it's a post office. So if you have letters to mail, you can get your stamps, or packages to send, you can take care of it there. But you'll also find an exhibit that was created by Martello Media. And you know, we talk about Malta a lot there. We actually visited Fort St. Angelo in Malta, in the Mediterranean, just a couple of hours boat ride from Sicily, or a quick flight into Italy if you wanted to do that. But you will find an exhibit at Fort St. Angelo that goes into, you know, great detail on the history of Malta in the most engaging way. It starts in a room where you sit down in what feels like you've just gotten on a boat, maybe a 10,000-year-old boat. and you're sitting on the boat and you are experiencing the early stages of the development of Malta. And then you go from room to room, learning more to the present day. And that was created by Mark's company, Martello Media. So those of you who are associated with some attraction or some museum, some place that people like to come and you'd like more people to come and visit, and those that have been before, you want to give them a good reason to come back, you want to get in touch with Mark at Martello Media and see what they can do to help you, because they're geniuses at what they do. And like my former architect years ago, who built the most exquisite houses and shopping centers and all kinds of commercial buildings, but exquisitely. I was in his office one day, Mark, and he got a phone call. We were working on the design for our house, and he got a phone call and he said, "You don't mind if I just take this quickly?" And it was from a woman who had $500 or $1,000. That's it. To invest in making the front of her house look more appealing. She loved the house, but she hated the outside, the front, the curb, lack of curb appeal. And he was on the phone planning what he could do for $500 or $1,000 to perk up this house with some shutters and some flower boxes and a little portico with some columns around the front door. And that's all it would cost. And when he was, and the woman was thrilled, and he said, "They'll work up the plans." And when he hung up, I said, "You know, you build multi-gajillion dollar homes and commercial places. How do you find time to deal with something that's $500 or $1,000? And he said, "You know, Stephanie, I believe that everybody who wants the services of the of an architect should have them available. So, you know, whatever the budget, we'll make it happen." And you know, and the man's name was Jerry Cronovet. I don't know if he's still with us, but what a marvelous, marvelous person he was. And I know that if you've got something up your sleeve that you'd like to be doing and you need improvement on it, a freshening up, a new appeal to increase your visitorship, you might want to talk with Mark. I'm sure he can come up with something that'll work with you. So I want to talk a bit about the British connection. You know, it's a funny story. It's actually because of Paul McCartney that I know you, Mark. Did you know that?
Yeah, well, I discovered that yesterday when we were chatting. So there
just,
you go.
Just to share with my audience quickly, when we were looking for a venue for a family event, and the decision was made that the event would take place in Ireland, although neither my husband nor I have any Irish connections other than that I was a leprechaun in a previous life. We decided it was going to be in a castle, and we started looking at castles in Ireland, and we honed it down to five potential castles it could be in. And then I went to someone at Tourism Ireland in New York City to discuss which one of these should we choose. And when she looked, I asked for the list, and I handed her the list. She looked at it, and she said, "Oh, I see you have Castle Leslie on here." I said, "Yes." And I hadn't been to any of these places. And I just did it all online. And she said, "Oh, Paul's place." And I said, "Paul who?" She said,
"Oh, Paul."
"Yeah, Paul McCartney." Or as Uncle Jack would have said, "Paul McCarthy." she said, I said, "What has he got to do with it?" And she said, "That's where he got married in June of 2002. And I said, "Well, if it's good enough for him, it's good enough for us." And we had the event 3 days at Castle Leslie. And then we became friendly with the folks, the family, the Leslie family. And we were invited to the celebration of two special birthdays at the castle being celebrated together. And it was a 4-day, 3-night event for many of the people who were invited. And we were among those that were invited for the whole 4 days and 3 nights. And so were you, Mark, as a member of the family. And that's when we met. It was probably, I don't know, six, 7 years later after we had had the event at the castle. And that's where the connection came from. So had it not been for Paul McCartney getting married at Castle Leslie, you and I wouldn't know each other.
Well, we have a lot to be grateful for. But poor Paul, the younger generation who the Beatles weren't what they were, was important to us oldies. And he was dating his future wife, Heather
Mills. No, Heather Mills.
I've forgotten her.
Was it Heather Mills?
Heather Mills. Because his mother came from just outside where Castle Leslie. He was tracing his family connections with her, and she was quite a celebrity in Ireland because she'd done the Late Late Show about her charity for people with missing limbs. So she was a bit of a local hero at the time, whereas for a younger generation, they had no idea who Paul McCartney was. So somebody said, "Oh, there's that Heather Mills off the Late Late Show down at the pub in the village, and there's some old fella buying free drinks for everyone and asking nosy questions." So when I realised who it was, I said, her chauffeur. And I said, "I don't think it's her chauffeur. I'm pretty sure it's her fiancé." And they went, "Ugh, he's old."
And that would have been Paul McCartney they were talking about.
Sorry?
That would have been Paul McCartney they were talking
about. Yes, it was Paul McCartney. They were horrified that Heather Mills was dating her chauffeur. So there you go. So rather ties in with that the famous Paul McCartney busking in Piccadilly in England, and doing Beatles covers. And a lot of people giving him money were like, "There, you're not nearly as good as the real Beatles, but
oh, that's
not bad."
That's hilarious. That's Did you ever see the film?
At least you look the part, if you don't sing well enough.
Did you ever see the film Back to School with starring Rodney Dangerfield? You have to see it. Write it down. I know I gave you a list of films yesterday for homework that you have to see. But this one... Rodney Dangerfield goes to college because his son is a freshman, unhappy, thinking about dropping out. And so he decides as the father, he's going to go too and keep his son's spirits up and keep him in school. But he actually enrolls and he has to write papers. And one of the papers that he has to write in an English class is on a Kurt Vonnegut book. And I think it was One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And he gets a terrible grade on it. He's told, you know, he doesn't understand the first thing of what Kurt Vonnegut was trying to say. Except he had, this was a very rich fellow, and he had hired Kurt Vonnegut to write his report about.
Oh, yes.
And he got a bad grade on it. Anyway, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll come right back. Don't leave me.
What the devil take the women for? They never can be easy. Mushering, durum, do, durum, da. Quack, fall, da, da, dee, oh. Quack, fall, da, da, dee, oh. There's whiskey in the jar. I went unto my chamber.
It's Travel with Stephanie Abrams.
I'm talking with Mark Leslie, the CEO of Martello Media, based in County Dublin, Ireland, and a very good friend. We were having a conversation yesterday, and I wanted to share some of the things we talked about with you, all of you today, or as in the South, we would say all y'all, which is the plural of y'all. I was really interested in some of the things that are going on currently in Europe, particularly in the UK, and the effect of Brexit in the most unbelievable overlapping, outpouring, messing up so many different areas of what was otherwise normalcy and growth and progress in every level, economically, politically, you know, just right down to the experiences of people who are just happy people going to work, making whatever they make, paying their bills, having some money left over to have fun and travel. And it's all getting messed up with this Brexit story. And there was a relationship between the conversation about that and the conversation about the Beatles, who we all think of as British in America, who are, in fact, from Liverpool, which is seen as an annex of Ireland because of the huge Irish population in Liverpool. And if you think about it, McCartney, Lennon, Harrison was part Irish. What about Ringo? Oh, yes.
Oh, very. Starkey is a very Irish name.
So his name was Starkey.
You only have to look at them and listen to them, because actually the Dublin accent and the Liverpool accent are broadly very similar. If you do a dub accent, you know, ring his end like that, and then you block the nose with a bit more soot, it turns straight into a Scouser accent, which is the Liverpool accent. Because seaports opposite each other often have much more in common with each other than with their hinterland. So
yes.
Dublin has a lot more in common culturally and accent-wise with Liverpool than either Liverpool or Dublin have with their immediate hinterland.
And you can still go today from
one phenomenon around the world.
I mean, the two places that are easiest, well, there is actually three places that you would take a ferry to get from the UK to Ireland, and they would be Holyhead in Wales,
yes,
Liverpool in England, and Stranraer in Scotland. And you could go from Dublin to Liverpool or to Holyhead. But I think you have to go from Larne in Northern Ireland to go to Stranraer. I don't know that you can go from Dublin to Larne. Can you?
Poor Northern Irish are about to be completely hammered industrially because thanks to the benefits of the Good Friday Agreement and the European Union, all of their agricultural produce, and they are a heavily agricultural part of the UK, producing very valuable food supplies, does not go across the direct route to Scotland because their market's down in the south of England. So all of their freight exports to the rest of their United Kingdom travel over the border frictionlessly at the moment, down the M1 motorway into Dublin, into the port of Dublin, straight across to Liverpool or Holyhead and straight onto the M6 down and distributed. So fresh produce from Northern Ireland is on the supermarket shelves the next morning. Brexit, this clowns who thought up this Brexit scheme, are now expecting Northern Irish farmers and exporters to go through a whole, you know, 5-hour customs delay and form filling to get into the Irish Republic. then queue up at the point of Dublin to go through the whole export licences from the Republic of Ireland to get on a ferry to Britain, then get off and face more customs and more form filling and more... by which time, you know, their fresh food produce have probably taken up to 10 times what it took when there was just, you know, effectively the borders were just invisible lines on the map. Because you can see the problem. And then we have this mad situation for poor Northern Ireland where, just because of their bizarre first-past-the-post system, the whole of Northern Ireland is only represented by the Democratic Unionist Party, which even English journalists describe as the political wing of the Old Testament. And they bizarrely voted for Brexit, this one political party, when the overwhelming majority of the community in Northern Ireland, both Catholic and Protestant, both nationalist and unionist, voted to remain because they realised it would be an economic catastrophe for Northern Ireland, both because they get 40% of their government subventions directly from Europe, and B, because 80% of their exports are straight into England, using the Republic of Ireland as a shortcut land bridge into the rest of the United Kingdom. So suddenly they have lost their direct access. You know, they've got to cross through three sets of customs and tariffs and licenses and checks, you know. Imagine if Vermont had to export its produce into New York and go through customs clearance into New Hampshire, then export licenses out of New Hampshire into Connecticut, and then import licenses into Connecticut, and then export out of Connecticut, you know, into New York State. That's suddenly what is about to open up in front of us next month if they don't figure some end to this madness.
I'm glad you left Massachusetts out of that.
Her beloved union with Scotland and Northern Ireland. But Brexit is doing more to destabilise the whole United Kingdom. There is a serious possibility now of Scotland breaking away from England, Northern Ireland breaking away from England, and effectively ending the United Kingdom. Wow. Just because of the little England mentality of the Brexiteers, who never considered Scotland, Wales or Northern Ireland, never came into their calculations, proving to the Scottish nationalists who narrowly lost a referendum on full independence from the United Kingdom on the grounds that they would be immediately expelled from the EU and their only way of staying in the EU was to not have an independent Scotland. And now the same English who told them that are doing the very opposite, that they are being expelled from the EU, European Union, by being connected with England. So the exact reverse. So they feel completely double-crossed, as we in Irish North and South, who voted for a Good Friday agreement that allowed an all-Ireland economy to develop and rid the scourge of a hard border in Ireland away forever, as we thought.
And
now we're being threatened by Britain crashing out without a deal, forcing a hard border onto the Irish border. So it would be like the Germans waking up in some nightmare situation for some unaccountable economic reason. The Russians would be reimposing the Berlin Wall through the middle of Berlin and across the German countryside. You know, it's an unthinkable thing. But more unthinkably, the British national identity, British, very important national identity, because it incorporated all four nationalities, the Welsh, the English, the Northern Irish and the Scots, has been completely ditched by the English.
We're going to take a break right there, and we're going to go through the top of the hour news and hold you with us. So stay with us, everybody. We're flying high.